The following program was paid for by the Todd Leonard Foundation. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of WMTR. As always, it is advisable to consult a professional before making a major decision. It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Once again, I have a great honor bringing on a friend to talk about all the great things he's doing, Dr. Glenn Goldstein, local dentist right here in Randolph. I've known Glenn for years, and I think we're going to really enjoy the show today. Glenn showed up this morning, for those who obviously don't know too much about the good doctor. He's a huge Rutgers fan, and he did not disappoint. All the accoutrements, the hat, you name it, the pen. In fact, I'm assuming he has the pajamas underneath his ensemble today.
Glenn, that was the attire for today. It's a little early.
Alan, I'm glad you joined us this morning as well. My producer was kind enough to wake up. Good morning, Dr. Goldstein.
Good morning, Mr. Leonard.
It's a real honor once again to have you join us. Doc, I know you have a practice here right in Randolph, and I drive by it pretty much every morning on the way to work. What type of dentistry do you focus in, Doc?
Well, we focus on all levels of dentistry. We treat everyone from 8 to 100. We do children, families, adults. We do all levels of service in my office. We do general dentistry. We do surgery, orthodontics, TMJ, treatment, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And how long have you been a dentist for?
This coming May will be 33 years.
I must say, for the listeners, you still look handsome considering the years of toil.
So, a lot of work goes into that.
Well, it shows, though. You look like you did some push-ups before you arrived at ODL. Ellen, in fact, was impressed. You haven't disappointed yet. And once again, I really appreciate you joining us.
It's my pleasure.
So Doc, you live in Morris County?
Live in Morris Township, yes.
Okay. And I understand you're blessed with a wonderful wife, and you have beautiful kids.
Blessed. Wonderful wife, three children, two boys and a girl.
Beautiful. So in terms of dentistry, I have a good friend, a mutual friend, the good Dr. Doppelt, who I grew up next door. And
Howard.
Howard's a good man. His late dad, Charlie, wonderful guy as well. Why'd you decide to become a dentist?
That's an interesting question. My original path was medicine. So you asked me, okay, you're going to ask, how did I get into this? A long time ago, somebody asked me that very question. What are you going to do when you grow up? And I said, I want to be a doctor. And this is during my high school years. And I wasn't doing too well in school. And the person that I said that to said to me that you'll never make it. And that was a magic moment in my life that transformed me. And I said, I will show you. And that's really what happened. So I began college.
So it was a dare. It was
pretty much
actually
a dare. Like, yes. I'll show you. I will make it. So started college, pre-med, focused on medical school. Very challenging, first one or two semesters. And I had some classmates. You know, we were going through the same thing together, having some difficulties, getting the grades because we all wanted to go to medical school. And one of them said, have you ever thought about dentistry? And I said, no. So that got me thinking, and then I volunteered down at Middlesex Hospital down near Rutgers, and I became friendly with the resident who took me under his wings and showed me around. We became friends, and I became interested in dentistry. And then right around the same time, I had my wisdom teeth taken out, and the oral surgeon befriended me, and he took me in his office, and we talked. He gave me some books to read on surgery, and that began the journey of, okay, well, maybe I will choose dentistry.
Interesting. A lot of people in life always think about those crossroads and folks that they came in contact with and really had a life-altering impact on people's lives.
Right.
So, Doc, obviously the show is, as much as it's great just hanging with you and talking, is about people doing great things in the area and helping others in need. And I had seen a while ago that you had done some things with the remote area medical, which I'm going to explore in some detail this morning. But in preparing for today, I know that you've been involved in the donated dental services of New Jersey, and I really wasn't familiar with that. What was that about?
So donated dental is a program right here in Jersey that helps people in need. So people that need dentistry that don't have the resources to get it apply to this program. And then there are dentists in the state who volunteer their services, whether it's general dentistry or specialty service, to treat these people. I've been a member, or I've been involved, let's say, since 1994.
And where does these services, where do you go to provide these free services?
Oh, they come to my office.
Oh, okay.
They become patients of mine.
Okay. And in terms of doing that, I mean, how's that been working out for you?
Oh, it works out great for me, but it works out great for them too. It's a wonderful thing, Todd, to, these people are down and out and they have no resources to take care of themselves. And it's a wonderful opportunity to help other human beings, make them feel like human again.
Right. Is that one of the in terms of your career, in terms of helping others like that in that context, was that something you always wanted to do or just kind of happened?
Well, no, I mean, you know, anywhere in the medical field, your impetus is to help others, you know, whether it's in medicine or dentistry or whatever, you're helping people, you know, have a better life.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, I was thinking about most of the listeners when they think of their dentist, they're not overjoyed about the concept because
that's not true. They love us.
Well, maybe under your auspices, but many people do think, oh my God, I'm going to go see my dentist. But it is wonderful to find out, you know, you're really doing those extra services to help others. In terms of, your background and being there to help, one of the things that, before we talk about remote area medical, is the heinous attacks of 9/11, that cowardly attacks devastated our country for a brief moment, but we're a very powerful country. I wanted to talk about some of the things that you did after that horrible day many years ago. Where were you during 9/11, Doc?
Well, just like everybody else, I remember exactly where I was. You know, it was our Pearl Harbor day. I was in my office in Randolph on my old office on Route 10, working on a patient, and we happened to have TVs in our operatories, and they had a image of the World Trade Center, you know, with a hole through the side of the building, and they said that Cessna, small airplane, flew into the building. And I happen to be a pilot, and I haven't flown in a while, but I flew Cessnas. And I know that if a Cessna hit the World Trade Center, there wouldn't be a scratch on the World Trade Center. So at that moment, I knew that we were attacked. I knew that a large aircraft hit the building. And of course, I began to cry because it was just the thought of what just happened. It was horrible, horrible.
Yeah, I remember I was actually on trial in Union County in Elizabeth up on the fifth floor, and there was a news report. Somebody came into the courtroom that a plane had hit the tower. And at first, my first reaction is, well, that's strange. How could a pilot hit the World Trade Center? You know, I assume there's a much larger craft. And then after the second tower was struck, it was obviously everybody realized the gravity of the situation. In fact, it was a strange time. Ellen, do you remember that day?
I was in Italy.
You were in Italy, so you're overseas.
So I got off the beach, remember, it's 6 hours ahead. So my husband and I, it was a beautiful day in Italy, like it was a beautiful day here. And what's strange is, we were passing all the little cafes in Italy, and my husband's like, wow, there's no soccer game on. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, why are all these people huddled around the TVs at the little cafes at the beach? And it wasn't until we got back to the hotel room and turned on the TV and realized they weren't, like, what everyone was watching.
Right.
So I was, and I lived in Hoboken, so I would have been right there in essence, but we were actually in Italy for vacation with
the
family.
A lot of, obviously, people in our great country remember where they're at. That was certainly, as Dr. Glenn brought up, the Pearl Harbor, which is Obviously, it was yesterday, too, that horrible anniversary. Doc, so I recall, like I said, I was in court on trial, and I remember there was a lockdown, and people didn't know which way it was up, and there was a lot of confusion, a lot of tears, a lot of anxious moments. And then our country were strong. So, Doc, in response to those cowardly attacks and the need, what, if anything, did you do to kind of help out, give back, and use your particular area of expertise?
Well, nothing initially. Interestingly enough, I got a phone call probably 2 days later from a dentist in New York who was asking for records of one of my patients. Wonderful guy. And, of course, I got them the records. So that was the standard. You know, if somebody was presumed lost in the building, you would submit their x-rays pre-mortem, you know, before they pass. And that got me into action. One of my patients was killed in the attacks, Nick Rowe. God rest his soul. In fact, after I submitted the x-rays, I got a call about 3 or 4 days later from my dental school roommate, who happens to be on DMORT, which is a federal team that is actually dispatched to any natural disaster. So, for instance, 9/11, Katrina, Puerto Rico, they get immobilized and they get dispatched, and they have at least a two-week tour of duty. So he's a dentist, private practice, but he's a member of DMORT. He called me at about 2-3 o'clock in the morning and said, "We think that we have your patient here, but the x-rays don't match what's in his mouth." And of course I said, "Well, he came to me. I replaced all his work, and he has not had another set of x-rays to show what was done." So having somebody, a patient who I knew very well, die in the attacks, you know, set it off for me, that I had to go in and help. Now, just a little bit of background, I have been a member of what's called the New Jersey Dental ID Team. And that's, you know, that's a team that's charged with, you know, identifying people with their remains. So, but there really wasn't, obviously there was nothing for us to do for many years, thank God. And it was a very, you know, splintered kind of group. So my friend, Dr. Stu, was in New York already with the DMORT team. And he was instrumental because, once again, the New York team was the New York team. The New Jersey team was the New Jersey team. So there weren't many people from New Jersey going into New York to help. Okay. So he was instrumental in getting me in to the system there. And I got in. They immediately saw that I was able to handle things, and they kind of gave me the clipboard, essentially. In fact, I saw Dr. Sonkin last week at the Greater New York meeting, and I remember that he actually, we were in the basement of the medical examiners, and he handed me the clipboard. He said, you take over. And in any event, so I spent a good part of 9 months going into New York City on Fridays helping out.
Well, Doc, once again, I mean, that was an incredibly challenging time for you, but I know that I would believe your sense of duty to help the country and to help the families with closure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in terms of that experience, that's a lot. Every Friday night for 9 months to see the horrific up-close losses was, I'm sure, something. We're not going to delve into any too much detail about it, but to this very day, I'm assuming there's just part of you that is just there sometimes, right?
It's etched into your memory. It's like, I likened it to going to Vietnam for a day and then coming back to civilization. You know, it was such a stark contrast. And you really had to just kind of just get in the moment and just say, I'm here to do a job, and I'm not going to get so emotional about this. I'm here to help, and I'm just going to do my work.
Well, that's really a blessing to do that. We may have a mutual friend. My friend Jay Friedman was at the Port Authority, Lieutenant Friedman, and part of his detail, which he never talked about, was basically going to Ground Zero.
Sure.
And great friend of mine, but that's something also we just really don't talk about. But I know to this very day, it certainly has affected him in many ways. As a result of the commitment, Doc, did any... not that you did it for accolades or a pat on the back, but were you recognized?
Well, they did have at the conclude when we wrapped up our work there, and of course the work is never done because it's actually still going on. There's remains that remain down at the medical examiner's office. There's a whole park that's set up. So when we officially wrapped up, they had a dinner for us at the World Trade, at the Waldorf Astoria. Very nice. Very nice.
You know, it's interesting with all that you know, everybody went down there to try to go through the remains. You saw the workers in the area, and you didn't really think about the process of dental records and trying to identify. My girlfriend lost her brother, a good friend of mine, and he was the 13th body identified, but that was a rarity. Yeah. But you never think about you hear dental records, but you don't really think about that a dentist actually gets a phone call for the records for a patient. Like, I never would have even, you just don't dig down that way. You just hear dental records. Like, you don't really think about where do these dental records come from, and dentists are actually getting phone calls about patients.
50% of the identifications, give or take, was dental.
Crazy.
The rest was DNA.
I'm sure the listeners aren't really thinking about that. I think you just hear dental records and, you know. Records, they appear out of thin air, and, you know, like...
And this was a needle in a haystack. I mean, we were not getting complete... I'm not going to get too descriptive here, but we were not getting complete human beings.
Right.
We were getting fragments of, you know, maybe...
piece this all together.
Maybe three teeth, and then we had to, you know... So there was a system, there was
a puzzle.
Yeah, it's a puzzle, so, you know... And now it's a little better, you know, with computers. But we had computer program that we would input... You know, we found these three teeth, and they had, let's say, these three fillings or a root canal or whatever. And then on the other end, the pre-mortem, somebody would input that data, and it would be like, okay, let's see if anything matched. So it was very detailed, very tedious process. Yes.
Right, but once again, Doc, and what when I was preparing, and until I did not know that you had made such a commitment. You know, obviously it's very, very sad to talk about that, but and Ellen touched on it as well, is a lot of folks don't realize what has to go on, sadly, when there's these kind of disasters. And you stepped up, you volunteered your time, you left your practice, you left your family, and you went back into really hell once a week for 9 months is once again just a huge commitment, and God bless you to help us all, because I remember there were families, they put posters up and they didn't know where their loved ones were for months, and they were praying against all hope that somehow maybe, you know, there would either be a miracle or there would be at least some closure. But what you did with your colleagues made a huge difference for these families. I'm sure they're very, very thankful for those efforts.
And what was interesting, I forgot to mention, this patient of mine, Nick Rowe, the story goes that he was always late to work, and him and his three coworkers had a meeting. I don't know if it was the 106th floor or whatever the top floor of the World Trade Center is. I think it was the 106th floor. They had a meeting that day, and he showed up to work on time for the first time in a long time. And his three coworkers went down, I guess, to the basement or whatever to get breakfast, and he remained at the top. And that's why he was found so quickly, because he was on the top.
Right. And once again, I mean, we all know, sadly, we had a very close family friend whose son-in-law, sadly, was killed in that as well. It was his second day at the job. And that's just life's mysteries. There's no rhyme or reason to it. And, you know, God rest his soul as well. But what you did, once again, I'm sure everybody listening is grateful, since that type of commitment is really incredible. Doc, obviously that's a very, very sad chapter in our history. I wanted to talk about remote area medical. I candidly didn't know very much about it. I saw that you posted some stuff on Facebook, and since you're a good friend of mine, I was curious. I was like, this Dr. Goldstein, wait, this guy's good people, remote area medical. For the listeners, what is remote area medical, and can we talk about that?
Sure. So remote area medical is an organization that was started many years ago by someone by the name of Stan Brock. Stan, many people probably don't know who he is, but anybody that's my age remembers a show called Wild Kingdom on Sunday nights with the host was Merle Perkins, white-haired guy. Well, his sidekick was Stan Brock. He was the guy that used to wrestle the alligators and so forth and so on. And he's the one that began this organization.
And what's the impetus? So in terms of remote area medical, when it first started, and I understand, sadly, Stan Brock is no longer with us, or really an incredible person. We're going to talk about that in a little bit as well. But what was, to your understanding, the purpose of remote area medical?
So originally, as Stan tells the story, remote area medical was set up to help people in remote areas. So his initial missions were in South America, the Caribbean. Stan was a pilot. Stan had a DC-3 old vintage airplane that they still have and they still use. Some of his missions, he actually parachuted in to these remote areas to help people. But there came a point where Stan realized that there are so many people in this country that need help, that he then began to bring the focus of his missions to the U.S.
So when you, obviously everybody can get motivated in different ways, and one of the reasons why I love doing the show is maybe someone listening may have an interest, maybe it could be remote area medical. I mean, we've had the Interfaith Food Pantry, Special Olympics. You know, we have people in different walks of life that somehow something hit them in the heart and said, you know, that's something I want to do. You know, whatever it might be. I know we had President Lockwood in on from the 200 Club, who had just a lot of respect for law enforcement and first responders, and I think that's a beautiful thing to get involved. So, Doc, let's talk about remote area medical. How'd you even, what made you decide, like, this is something maybe I could do?
Well, it was funny, but I was actually watching one of my favorite shows, 60 Minutes, and I'm not sure when this story originally aired, but it may have been 2007 or 2009. But there was a story hosted by Scott Pelley discussing remote area medical, and it showed, of course, it interviewed Stan, but it showed all these people, whether in Tennessee or Kentucky or whatever, they were lined up for free care. They were actually in their cars, driving the day before, sleeping in their cars overnight. Some of them didn't even have gas in their car to keep the heat on. And when I saw this story, and it was, they were giving out free medical care, free dental care, but, primarily dental, because most of these people have no access to dental care. It moved me. It shook me. And I immediately said, I have to get involved. This is something that I can do. And from that point, I then, looked up their organization, found out how I could volunteer, and then volunteered.
So for those folks that, as we continue to discuss remote area medical, is there a website or a way they could contact the folks to either donate, either financially and or with their expertise?
Yeah, so their website is ramusa.org.
Can you say that one more time?
ramusa.org.
Okay. So in terms of when, it moves you to get involved, do you say to your wife, your kids, I mean, your beautiful family, I mean, they're still relatively young.
Thanks for that.
Well,
you're too kind, Todd.
I tried to be. I did drag you on, and I hope I didn't wake you up from your dreaming of Rutgers winning a national championship.
Rose Bowl.
With Coach Chiano now back at the helm.
Absolutely.
So
welcome back, Coach.
Yeah. So how does that work, though? So you want to make this commitment, but obviously this isn't around the corner. I mean, you just told us you'd have to travel down to the Volunteer State, Tennessee. So do you say to your wife, hey, listen, honey, this is something I want to do? Or how does that work?
Well, I don't have to say that. My wife knows, you know, that I'm committed to helping other people, and so is she. She's the same way. She's very committed. She does a lot of work locally helping others. So it's a natural thing for me to just say, I'm going away for the weekend. She's very supportive of that, of course.
All right. You have something to add, Ellen?
Well, we talked about, Todd, on the past shows, we talked about how children view this, and I'm curious about how your children view what you and your wife are doing, because we've talked about that.
Oh, we indeed, in fact, you're jumping ahead, Ellen, but I don't mind.
All right, so we can back up.
No, that's fine.
We can back up.
No, that's fine. We have a little bit.
We can go forward, really.
we don't want to be, we just don't want to stop. And that's a valid point, Ellen, in terms of the children as they start to see their parents do wonderful things. So since Ellen kind of stole the thunder, go ahead, Doc. Yeah, since I want Ellen to feel a little bit bad.
So, I mean, of course, as parents, you know, and my children are probably listening right now, our job is to teach our children, you know, what to do, how to navigate through life, right from wrong. But more importantly than that, your children watch you. They watch you do what you do. And some of what I do is based on me watching my father. So whether it's good or bad, you have to, you know, that's what your children are going to follow. And of course, my children have followed in my footsteps with respect to Ram as well.
So, and Ellen, don't be sad. I was just joking with you. You could chime in any questions you want. You are the producer. We appreciate your attendance, especially.
Producer here to ruin the show.
And I understand you were out last night. So welcome again. Good morning. So, Doc, getting back to this whole concept. You learned about remote area medical right here in the great United States of America. You saw what was going on. What was your reaction when you first saw that?
It was shocking. I mean, you know, we live in an area where, you know, we're like in Disneyland here in Morris County. I mean, the tri-state area is its separate world. But you travel to other areas, you know, whether it's Tennessee or Kentucky or whatever, or Georgia, There, it's a different story. I mean, there are pockets everywhere in the U.S. of people that just don't have.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, too, because we had the Interfaith Food Pantry on recently, and Executive Director Lake, Nathan Umbriak, and Margaret MacBohm, and we were talking about people didn't have any food to eat right here in Morris County, one of the most affluent, you know, counties in the country. And so when I was getting ready for the show too, and I was researching remote area medical, I'll be honest, I was like, they're going to bring these planes into third world countries and do these food drops and bring in wonderful people to give them medical care. I'm like, wait a minute. That's not a third world country. We're talking right here in our country.
Well, you know what, the genesis of the whole thing, and I may be off with my story, but Stan was, I think he was in somewhere in New Guinea or something to that effect, and he had some kind of medical problem. And he tells the story that there was no place for him to access care. And he had to walk like 10 miles to get care in this other country. And that was his genesis for starting this organization, to bring it closer to people that had no access.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
So what you're trying to do, it's not just about people not having money for care. It's they literally don't have access to the care. Like, I'm trying to understand, because there's two different. Dental work can be expensive. Insurance doesn't really cover it the way it does, I feel, medical.
Yeah.
But is it that these people don't even have access? Or a little bit of both.
I think it's more of the money aspect, you know. So these people that are down and out, if they have X dollars, the first dollar is going to go to feed their children.
Right.
And then the second dollar is going to put gas in their car and et cetera, et cetera. So the last thing that they're spending, and they don't have the money to spend. And of course, part of the problem is that, you know, their lifestyle, you know, leads them to a lot of dental problems.
Right.
You know, because they have limited resources, they're eating poorly and, you know, of course.
So when you first saw this air back in, let's say, 2007 on 60 Minutes, you saw a long line of folks getting up at the crack of dawn, basically waiting to receive some dental or medical services?
Yes.
Okay. And as we just talked about, that's a big eye-opener right here in our country. And you decided to step up, lend a hand up, and fly down to Tennessee?
That's correct. So, and you may ask, why did I pick Tennessee? Well, you know, these clinics are sometimes hard to even get to. That's problem number one. So some clinics you could fly to an airport, and then it's a two-hour drive to get to the clinic. So did the research, looked at the map, and said, where can I get to in the course of a weekend and not have to drive 2 hours after I land to get to the clinic?
Very, very good, Doc. Listen, this has been flying by. We're going to take a quick break. Everyone listening, we'll be right back in 30 seconds.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
So welcome back, everyone. We were just talking with Dr. Goldstein about him going to be going down to Tennessee and help others in need, which is once again a wonderful thing to do, especially to give up time from his family and give back, especially in such an important cause. So, Doc, you take your first flight down to Tennessee, and what's it like? I mean, you show up, you're a New Jersey dentist, you're in Tennessee. How's it work? I mean, you're there. I'm assuming you bring all your equipment, or I'm not sure. So what do you bring down there?
I bring me. I bring me, and I bring my glasses, my magnification. So the way it works, Todd, is that Remote Area Medical, which is pretty amazing, they show up to a location with an 18-wheeler truck, and they actually set up the clinic. So they have dental chairs, compressors, suctions, handpieces, medical equipment. They even have it's like a truck where they actually make glasses. They actually make them while you wait. So the first clinic that I went to was in it's called Anderson County in Tennessee. It was at a church. I went down with a colleague of mine, and we got there Friday, and we went there. They were just setting up, and it was inside a gymnasium in a church in Anderson County. Just a little background. Anderson County is known as the meth capital of the world. So, Anderson County, or at least this town that we were in Anderson County, was like Mayberry, you know, like little one-story buildings with mom and pop shops. And the biggest building in the town is a three-story building, and it happens to be the courthouse. Because there's so many court cases with meth that happens to be the biggest building in the town. So, you know, clinic was Saturday, Sunday. And I was, you know, shocked by what I saw. I mean, we're talking about people in their 20s and 30s and 40s. All their teeth are rotted completely. It was, you know, I mean, we see some of that locally, but this was shocking to me.
And in terms of just obviously doing that, when you go down there and you see the enormity of how many people need this help, you touched on it. So there's dentists. I'm assuming whether they're like internists or they're optometrists.
So they have physicians. They have optometrists. They have gynecological care. That's something they added. They even have veterinary care now. So they actually offer people show up with their animals for spay, neuter, et cetera, et cetera.
So are these folks that would we say are kind of fell between the cracks? Either they just couldn't afford insurance or didn't have enough money for the correct kind of insurance. I mean, who are these folks? I know you touched on, sadly, probably a substantial amount of those individuals have drug issues, but who are these folks in terms of financial perspective?
Well, you know, most of them are just unemployed people. They just, and I don't know how they even survive, but they somehow have money for food and cigarettes and soda and alcohol. But the story that I hear most often is that these people, you know, they are in car, they call it car wrecks down there. They were in a car wreck, and they started their journey with opioids, and one thing led to another, and that's where they end. And they have this, I call it a listless look on their face. They just stare. There's nothing there. You know, there's just, it's almost hopelessness.
So when you go down there, now you're from New Jersey and you're basically practicing dentistry in another state. How's that possible in Tennessee? How's that work?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Tennessee is called the volunteer state, and they actually stand by what they say. So Stanbrock, was instrumental in changing the state law. They rewrote the Constitution so that doctors could cross their border and volunteer without any fear of any retribution.
Think about that.
Unfortunately, there's only 12 states in the United States that allow that. So when I initially looked into, you know, serving with Remote Area Medical, one of the things that I had to determine was what states would allow me in. So I looked at California. No. I looked at Nevada. No. I looked at Ohio. No. Tennessee. Yes. So it's pretty sad that in the country that we live in, the laws still exist that we can't cross into any state and serve.
So, Doc, for the listeners, too, and you know, even Ellen was like, this is an eye-opener. You know, you would think if doctors are going to give their time freely, their expertise, and lend a hand up and help folks in need, and it is something, you know, part of my mission is to bring people together, you would say, what's more of a noble cause than help these individuals that basically have nowhere to turn? And it's a heartbreak to see that. How about in New Jersey? Is this program available?
Well, currently it's not available. I will tell you that I became friendly with Stan, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago. He approached me at one of the clinics, and he said, "You're from New Jersey." I said, "Yeah." He goes, I need to talk to your governor. I need to talk to Governor Christie." I'm like, "What's going on, Stan?" He said, "Well, we're trying to have a clinic in Jersey City." And he said, "I was contacted by Mayor Phillip at the time, still mayor, and they want to have a clinic, but I need to get to the governor so that he can create a law or an amendment whereby people can just come in for a particular weekend and help." So he asked me to get in touch. He said, "I heard from Steve Phillip. And then I have not been able to contact him." So I came back with the mission from Stan to get in contact with the mayor of Jersey City to try to get this thing moving along. And multiple phone calls, multiple messages, no response. At the time, I had a friend who was friends with Governor Christie, who I approached and wanted to get a meeting with. But unfortunately they were no longer friends, so that never happened. So, but Stan, you know, was relentless in his desire to bring something to New Jersey.
I think in New Jersey, some of the university teaching schools will have clinics for free care. Is that correct?
Not so familiar with that in Jersey.
Yeah, like maybe UMDNJ.
Well, it's UMDNJ, you know, I mean, they treat people that are, you know, underserved, but it's not free.
Not free. Okay.
Right. So, you know, I focus my efforts, to bringing this to New Jersey, and I went through probably a year and a half of toil to try to get something going. one of which was at Rutgers University, and the other was through the National Guard, because when I go to Tennessee, the clinic is in a National Guard facility. I spent over a year and a half, and I must tell you, without naming names or institutions, I was, I saw that this might in fact happen, but at the end of the day, it didn't happen. And it was a combination of red tape and politics and feelings being hurt, et cetera, et cetera. And it amazes me that, it's so difficult to try to do something nice. So, my message is, if there's any elected officials listening right now, contact me, because I would like to get the ball rolling again in New Jersey. I made a pledge to Sam that I was going to make this happen. He's no longer with us, but I'm going to follow through some way, somehow.
Yeah, Doc, so if somebody wanted to reach out to you, how would they contact you?
They can call my office.
What's the number?
973-895-7995, or go to the website, www.randolphdental.com.
Excellent. And once again, you're very energetic and also very young still, sir. So
thank you so much for that, Todd.
And don't give up. I mean, I think it's vitally important to do what you're doing. How many years have you been doing this now, Doc, the remote area medical?
Well, interesting you asked that. So this January, I'll be flying out again. This will be my 10th mission, 10th year in a row.
And in terms of, that's a long commitment. And this is what you go down like pretty much the entire weekend?
No, it's, so we fly in, Thursday night and then Friday, all day Saturday. And we could work Sundays too, but unfortunately there's only one flight out and that's 6:30 a.m.
Okay.
It varies.
Living in
New
Jersey and flying out of Newark, you'd never hear of there's one flight.
One. This is
Newark
Knoxville,
is
Tennessee.
One flight an hour.
This is Knoxville,
every
Tennessee.
Airline.
Yeah. Well, Alan, if we are exactly, I think the doctor emphasized that we're not here in Newark. So, in terms, Doc, of the rewards, in terms of just how you feel and the contacts and all that, I'm assuming you made some great contacts over almost a decade now.
Oh, absolutely. So the first mission that I went on, a gal approached me and said, do you need an assistant? Of course I need an assistant. Her name is Donna May, and I love Donna May. We became very good friends over the years. She's still my assistant. So we're in contact. Donna May comes to New Jersey or New York. I see Donna May. I fly down there. I go to Donna May's house. She makes me some beautiful southern cooking. I've also become friendly with a gal named Sherry. Sherry runs the clinic. You know, she runs the floor. We've become friends. Her boyfriend, Bart, we've become friends. In fact, Sherry, I'm going to give a shout out to Sherry. Sherry was at the very first clinic. Clinic number one with Stan. It was just her, Stan, a couple of the people when it was in his infancy. Sherry was also at clinic last year, which was number 1,000.
Right. In terms of how many folks this unbelievable organization, Remote Area Medical, have served, how many estimated folks have benefited in terms of this free care?
Well, overall, it's in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands, maybe 800,000. I could tell you that the average weekend that we go, there's probably about 1,000 patients that are seen, not only by dental, but combination of all the, you know, dental, medical.
Right. I was watching. You were kind enough to point me in the right direction, open my eyes a little wider, and I saw a long line at the crack of dawn. They hand out numbers, and it's pretty incredible just to see the long lines. And sadly, sometimes people, just their number doesn't get called, and that's a real problem as well. In terms, Doc, of Stan Brock, I know he's made a huge impact on your life. I know that you're really very, very close, and I'm still, I know you, you hold them very dear in your heart. In fact, before we started today, you had shown me really a coin, a memento, but I know it means so much to you. What's that coin about?
Actually, this coin was given to me by Stan. This was obviously, this is about 2 years ago. This was Mission 900. So that was kind of a milestone mission for them. So I have this, my lucky coin. I brought it in with me today.
All right. I also everybody has their own little things. I get a little superstitious. I have my little things I bring around with me as well that means the world to me. You know, Doc, you were talking about something, and I really thought this was interesting, which is the relationships you build. For those listeners thinking about getting involved, you meet some wonderful people. You know, I had on President Lockwood, Bill Lockwood from Mount Olive, great guy, great friend now. Craig Lombardi, Sweet Lou Ferraro, wonderful people. The Nisavachias, Ray Nisavachia, Lou Nisavachia. I got to meet folks from the Interfaith Food Pantry. And you know what happens? These become really good friends of yours, and it's a bond. And it also makes you feel good about just being around good people. I think there's a lot to be said. The people you hang out with, that's kind of tells a lot about who you are. So I think it's a blessing, everything you've done. I want to touch on something that Ellen had brought up a little bit to try to steal the thunder, but I still have a chance maybe to regroup. Your handsome family, beautiful family, Zachary, Gregory, Rachel, they've been involved at all with this remote area medical, Doc?
Of course. So all three of my children, Zachary, Greg, Rachel, have all been on various missions with me. I would say they've all been maybe two or three. And Zachary now, who's actually in dental school. So this is actually something that he's going to be doing for the rest of his life. He's been with me exclusively the last 2 years. And, of course, my other kids are in school or what have you. So, but he's been with me, and he's going to be taking over the reins soon. He's graduating in May.
You know, that's once again a great example. And I brought up the Nisavachia family only as you said as a little bit of a case study. Is Raymond has been given his time for half a century plus.
Wow.
He also looks good for his age, just in case he might be listening.
Say that to all the guys, don't you?
I try to butter it. You guys are getting up early. But the point is that his son, Lou, and I've known Lou, but I mean, I heard last week he's doing angel flights, and we talked about the Salvation Army and all these wonderful causes. And then I'm hearing about you, you know, laying the foundation, creating a legacy, and now Zachary. And how do you feel about that, Doc, that he's basically following in your footsteps?
It's amazing. I mean, you know, it's really cool when, like, you know, I'm in my office all day, and he's texting me X-rays and asking me what I, you know, what is it, what do I think? It's just really cool. That, you know, that's, you know, I didn't have that when I was coming through the ranks, but he's got that, and it's great that I can actually teach him and share. I'll save him a lot of trouble going forward.
No, you know, I miss my late dad, Alvin. He was a remarkable trial lawyer, greater father. He taught myself and my brother Scott and Mark, and my brother Scott's another great local trial lawyer. And it was really a blessing to kind of follow what he was doing, and he taught us so many life lessons, both in and out of the courtroom. So in terms of, you know, this dynamic, you mentioned Gregory, you mentioned Rachel as well. What's it like to get on a plane, you know, here from Mars? You know, you leave your place right here in Mars County, and you get to Newark, and then you're going down to Tennessee. What's the bonding like when you're doing that?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, you're part of your job as a parent is to teach your children everything, and having them come down to these missions and seeing how the other half lives or doesn't live so well is important for them, because they don't see that in Mars County. They do not. They see none. I think everything is rosy. I grew up in very humble beginnings, so for me, I understand, but they don't have such an understanding. So for me to take them and to let them see what's going on, how people are suffering, it's huge. It's impactful. It changes them.
Would you say it's also just made you as a family closer because of this commitment to give back?
Of course. I mean, you know, life's all about moments and memories and, you know, things like that.
Right. Ellen, I know you've talked in the past about with trying to, you know, make sure your children don't just live in the ivory tower and they see the world in terms of it's important to just treat everybody fairly and equally. What's your thoughts on that, about hearing from Dr. Glenn Goldstein this morning, local Randolph dentist, in terms of what him and his family's been doing?
Well, I agree. My kids are in the Morristown schools. I'm wondering if our kids even know each other, unless your kids are not in, you know, school. But
they're done.
They're done, yeah. So I'm a little bit behind you. But, you know, I was actually thinking also with dental care, like I was touching upon before, and I do want to ask this question. I feel like medical care is covered and dental care is not so much. So, like, my children will see people with missing teeth.
Correct.
And you think just because someone's missing teeth, like, it says a little bit of something about you. You know, people think
right.
maybe you don't have money, you're not educated, you're not.
Right.
But dental care is so expensive. And, you know, seeing people without teeth, and you realize a lot of it is just finances. Like, money's going to go somewhere else. And living here in North Jersey is expensive.
No doubt.
So, you know, my kids have noticed people without teeth, and they don't understand why does someone not have teeth.
Right.
I try to explain to them, because it's expensive. I'm paying your dental bills when you get a cavity.
Correct.
They don't understand
right.
anything about.
They let it go till it's tragic.
It's tragic, and then they can't afford to get an implant.
Correct.
I mean, an implant is $5,000 from beginning to end, you know.
Something
so,
like that, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think my kids do understand that, you know, they see it. They don't always understand it.
Right, and this is important, too, for the listeners. If they have children that perhaps that are thinking about getting involved, I think it is vitally important, just so we all understand that we have to work together to help each other. Doc, in terms of, you know, being involved in this remote area medical for almost a decade, I'm assuming you've seen a lot of patients over these last 10 years. And any stand out at all in your mind?
Patients, well, I mean, they're all, they all kind of blend in. You know, you'd asked me this question the other day. There was one instance, you know, because I became known as the guy down there that could get it done, they know that I'm more apt to be working on adults. They had a child that was in need of extractions. He had rotted teeth. It was infected, and I was actually about to walk out the door. It was on a Sunday, and they asked me, you know, we know you can get it done, because whoever was working on this young man gave up. So I went in, and I took care of business, but in the process of doing that, he bit me, and he bit me pretty hard. I mean, I actually had it was like alligator grip, you know. So that stays that little dent is still on my finger here. And there was another, there was a guy last year. He was probably in his mid-20s, and he had some rotted teeth. Not a lot, but his request to me was to pull all his teeth out. You know, and I always am reluctant to do that, because I know the impact. You know, even when patients come to me and they want a tooth removed versus trying to save it, I say, you know, you're gonna deal with this decision for the rest of your life, and it may not be such a good decision 10 years from now. And this guy, I said, you really want to lose all your teeth, because you know some of them are savable. You know, it's not, you don't have to lose them all. And he looked at me and he just said, listen, doctor, he goes, listen, I'm in pain right now, and not with all my teeth, but I know in time they're all going to hurt, and I just can't live like this. I would rather have no teeth in my mouth. This is how bad it is for these people. Imagine just being in pain constantly. So all his teeth were removed. As sad as it sounds.
Yeah, that's another stark reminder, unfortunately, of everyone, you know, with teeth, you take it for granted. But when you get a toothache, you could certainly relate to what the doctor just said, is sometimes the pain becomes intractable, and you don't know how to get out of that pain. So, Doc, in terms of the patients overall, I mean, are they, when you're performing these free services, and you obviously are a very talented, well-known local dentist here.
Thanks, Doc.
Thank you, Doc. And you come and you go down to the volunteer state. I mean, are the patients, are they grateful? Are they don't respond? Do they say anything to you when you're done doing your fine services?
Well, that's an interesting question, Todd, but I got to tell you that, you know, I have patients here that, pay for my services, and they're very appreciative of that because I help them. But I'm telling you that the look that these people have in their eyes when they say thank you to me, it blows you away. They mean it. When they find out that me and my children flew from New Jersey on our expense to come down and help them, they're blown away. And we don't do this for any accolades, but when someone looks me in the eye and thanks me like that, that's the reward. There's nothing better.
And that's a beautiful thing. And once again, Doc, you really capture the true essence of volunteerism is giving back. And if somehow down the road you get recognized, that's nice, but that's not why you're doing that. And that's the beauty of really giving freely from your heart and helping others in need. I wanted to touch upon, Doc, when you first started your dentist career almost 33 years ago, did you ever envision you would be doing these things, you know, donating your dental services in New Jersey? You got involved in the horrific attack in 9/11 to help the families find closure through some horrible circumstances. And now we talk about remote area medical where you go down and you spend your time really helping others. Did you think you'd be doing this?
No, of course not. I mean, you know, you start your journey in dentistry with one focus is to get things going, to, you know, pay off your impending debt and things like that. But, you know, there, you know, through life, there are doors and pathways that open up to you. And you have a choice to go down that path or not. And throughout my journey, these things have presented to me, and I've made the choice, the conscious choice, to get involved.
In terms of getting involved, and there's no one who doubt that getting involved, you stepped up, and there's no question you really are leading a really important life and helping others. How has it enriched your life, Doc? Have you put any thought to that question, or is that something you really didn't think about?
Well, not until you ask the question, Todd.
There you go.
But no, of course it enriches your life. I mean, you're getting out there and you're doing the right thing and you're helping people. And it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about helping others and giving back. And, you know, it's wonderful.
Right. Do you have any advice or anything else, not to pontificate, but just for listeners who are thinking about it? Maybe you got colleagues, dentists that, you know, they're busy, but maybe you could light a fire under them, or just folks in whatever lines of interest people have. Because I mentioned everybody's different. You know, certain things just motivate, turn people on. It's hard to really say what it is, but sometimes, you know, people are listening and not sure what to do. What would be your advice for those folks, maybe sitting on the sidelines, and you know, what's your thoughts?
Well, I mean, remote area medical or other organizations, you know, they don't just need doctors. I mean, you know, when we go to a mission, there could be 300 volunteers that are doing support. You know, there are people that are intaking patients, or people that sterilize instruments. There's hundreds of people that are required. So, with respect to RAM, yeah, I could ask all my dental colleagues to step up, and I have a friend of mine who joins me on all the missions. But short of that, there's always the opportunity to donate. RAMUSA.org. They are completely run by donations. In fact, since I began with them 10 years ago, they have grown into an organization. They have a huge warehouse now. They used to work out of an old school. They have a huge warehouse. They have a whole bunch of 18-wheelers. I mean, they have really expanded into some operation now. So you can just give your money versus your time.
Right. Well, once again, Doc, I wanted to thank you for joining us this morning. I was excited to have you on the show. Ellen never met you before, but I tried to warn her she's going to, you know, enjoy the show, since the doctor's a very interesting guy. He's got a lot of interest. But I'm blessed to have friends like the good doctor, who not only are very, very good in their field, but the great people. people that do things to help others. You know, I tell everyone, the reason why I started the show is just to put the spotlight on individuals that do give back. And I know people do it. They do it for the right reasons. Obviously, no one really wants to talk about themselves, but the doctor joined us this morning and talked about some very important things that really help others. I also wanted just to let the listeners know, I just started a charity, the Leonard Charity, which focuses on helping kids and families that are battling pediatric cancer. We also do some other things to help in the community. I lost my dad to pancreatic cancer, so part of my mission is to raise money to help others that are battling pancreatic cancer. You know, I really believe strongly we're in this world together to lend a helping hand. If you want to help someone, just do it. Pay it forward. You'll get so much more out of it. You have no idea you can touch lives. So once again, I want to wish everyone a wonderful rest of this weekend and look forward to having you join us next Sunday. Have a blessed weekend. Thank you.
Thank you.
The preceding program was paid for by the Todd J. Leonard Law Firm. The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the staff and management of WMTR. As always, it is advisable to consult a professional before making a major decision.